All right, so welcome everyone. My name is Paula Nassif, and I'm here with my co-host, Vanessa Farino. We're so excited to have an amazing rock star Latina friend of ours join our podcast today. Her name is Isis Ortiz Belton, and she's the vice president at Eastern Bank and also the president of Alpha Boston. Welcome, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Oh my God, thanks Paula, thanks Vanessa. I'm so happy to be here. Good, good, really good. It's. I was just saying it's Friday, so my favorite day of the week, great day today.
Yes, and Vanessa, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so excited to be having this episode, so I can't wait to dive right into it.
All right, so one of the things I'm always eager to know about Latinas, women of color, and like how they've gotten to where they are in their careers is, what is one of the most challenging moments or something that you could share, like in your career, or just, being a woman of color, right, working in corporate America, something that you could share that could help us get to know you a little bit better, and we'll all go around and share something as well.
So a challenge is the question, really. I think we can all attest to our journeys being certainly full of those, right? For me, I think now as an adult, right, it has been really navigating my career as like you said, as a woman and as a woman of color in finance. And, as oftentimes in a room, the only person who's identifying as LGBTQ plus, right? So I'm in an industry where we're dominated by mostly white men, right? So it's, those are the things that I sort of carry with me. And it's part of literally dealing with it every day. And they intersect in such a way that they make me really who I am today.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. And I think one thing I struggle sometimes with is, like, how can I be my true authentic self around people that may look at me and say, oh, wait, you're from Hawaii, aren't you? Like, where, and sort of people that maybe make an assumption. Like, so when I came to Boston, I lived in New Jersey. Everyone's like, oh, the Jersey Shore girl. And, and it's like they looked at me and they're like, okay, she didn't look like me. So, like, how can I have some common, make some common ground with her. So let's see how she looks. Let me make a comment. So it's hard, right, to bring your like true self to work if you feel like you're going to be called out or you're going to be that uncomfortable center of attention. But it's brave of you also to share that there is a lot of things that the LGBT community goes through in the workplace. And so, thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that on this podcast, because I'm sure a lot of the listeners who may be having similar experiences. And Vanessa, did you want to share anything from your experience in the corporate workplace being a Latina?
I think the first thing that comes to mind, I remember always being like 10 years younger at the minimum from everybody else. Usually like 15 to 20, but like at the minimum 10 years. And I remember like when spring or summer came and having my corporate jobs, I would see the woman dressed so fashionably and nice. And I remember I would try to go try these clothes on, and because I'm just curvier, things just were accentuated more on my body. And I remember I tried to wear something once where it wasn't disrespectful in the workplace, but it just looked different versus somebody else.
We wear it differently.
Yeah. And I remember someone at work told me, I don't want to sound disrespectful to you, but you're someone who's very smart and bright and you have a really great career future in front of you. I would recommend you wearing black. And I was like, wow. Oh. And I actually did, I think, for most of my life. It helped me in ways just by, like I blended in, right? Mm-hmm. But I also was able to really just, people focused on me and who I was and the contribution that I was bringing to the table. I had a seat at, you know, the table. I had a voice. People didn't have conversations without me in the room. And so those were like working with very high level executives and having that type of respect was awesome, but I couldn't be myself because if that kind of makes sense. Like I was very well respected and I was grateful for that because my peers who were fashionably, you know, at work were not in those rooms, but so it kind of was one of those weird situations where I was very grateful for that because I didn't feel, I knew that my manager was like, you know, this, it sucks to tell you this, but, it was a manager of mine, but I want to help you advance in your career. So it helped me, but it also, you know, hurt me because I just on a personal level, I would always be like, oh, I have to be the person wearing black. You know, I have to be the person wearing black. So actually in these past year, 1 or 2 years, it's like exploring what colors and patterns look like on me. And I believe I'm such a vibrant person. I love neon colors and it just affected me. And I never realized until like unpacking it because I wouldn't feel comfortable. I'd be like, no, I can't be that person.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that you bring that up because we literally, it's the smallest things that we struggle with. And it's things that other people really don't have to think about, right? For me, and we talk about our hair, right? And for a very long time, I wouldn't wear my hair like this, curly, right? Which is my natural hair, because I felt like I had to look a certain way. The same thing with wearing, like the same exact thing that you experienced, right? I'm a curvy woman, and wearing the things that I would always receive compliments in terms of my fashion, right? But I know that people are always also looking like sideways, and it's uncomfortable, right? And it's things that you have to like worry about and you know, carry with you while you're working, and all the while having to work twice as hard to get half the return, you know, because now you have to worry about your job. It's just society just puts so much pressure on us as women and as women of color to succeed and to look in a certain kind of way. And I think as you grow up, you know, those are insecurities and things that permeate, right? Because that's how we grew up. Like, you know, I've been told no my entire life. And so that gets to you, right? Imposter syndrome is a real thing, right? You know, you start to question whether you should be at the table, you know, and it's hard. It's difficult. And I love that you brought that up, Vanessa, that you talked about this, you know, the seat at the table, because I talk about that a lot. You know, I belong there. I equally belong there just like everyone else. But being in that room carries so much more weight for me than it does, you know, to those other men that are there. So, you know, I can talk about experiences that I've had in the corporate world, you know, even with my name, yes. You know, recently.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Funny story. This happened literally just weeks ago, in a client meeting. An accountant comes in and greeted and we're chatting it up. And he's like, oh, your name, you know, do you ever get anything about that? I'm like, yeah, but you know, I always make a joke and I'm always like, well, Starbucks gets it right now, right? So I don't have to worry about them misspelling it. People can actually pronounce it as well. So, you know, I made a joke out of it, right? The meeting goes on and we're going through numbers. And at one point, mind you, I'm there with a couple of my colleagues and the CEO of the company and all of that. And at one point it turns to my colleague, says his name and also says my name. And he's just kind of stops in the middle of everything and goes, can we do something about that? Can we do something about your name? Do you have like, he's like, I can't get past that. He's like, do you have a nickname or something?
Wow.
My Latina, my real other side did not come out because I was on that table. Right. But even my colleague who's, you know, a white male who's, you know, doesn't experience what I do, looked at me and was like, the F, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just those little things that you have to deal with. And then I had to sit there and me lo tragué, you know, I had to swallow it because at the end of the day, I want to be professional and, you know, it's the client and all of that. But, and I still struggle with that. You see, I didn't respond. So clearly and there are ways to approach that situation. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's a learning lesson. Like, how would I react next time, right? If that were to happen again, how could I? And you see, we clearly still to this day, I am years into my career. I consider myself a community leader And we still have those things that we go through. And as women, it's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Yes. One thing you reminded me of when, especially for certain, I've been in conversations where people are like, why are you putting pronouns in your signature? Like, why are you, or like comments like about, like a colleague in a similar colleague's name and like a lot of people mixing it up or spelling it wrong and just sort of laughing like, oh, sorry, I called you so-and-so's name. And those are little things that I think, like when someone starts a meeting and they're like, hey guys, and majority, you know, it's not all men, it's women, it's, you know, non-binary folks in the room. And so those ways that we communicate. And like you said, I think it's so important to educate. And this is coming up in our podcast quite a lot, Vanessa, right? That if there is a misconception of who we are, our culture, what we bring to the table, that we take a moment to maybe pull that person aside and try to find the words to address it. Because I think that's the hardest part. Like, if you're in especially a corporate meeting or something, the first thing you may do is be quiet, or you may want to lash out, or you may get upset. But like, how can you address those? Because it's an uncomfortable conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I want to add before we like wrap that topic. I think the other thing that has changed with me, which is, I don't know where it comes from, but two things. When I changed my last name, people were like, oh, more inclusive, because before it was Mindy Saval. And I remember when applying to jobs was not considered, applied for the same job years later, different last name, like slightly like more experience of the same, you know, but, oh, all about it. You know, it's weird how like the same people that you might meet that don't remember and they all of a sudden, you know, treat you differently. Also, when I got married, I was treated completely differently. It was like, you have a permanent seat at the table, if that makes sense. You know, and I always have been someone who never really cared to get married, wasn't a goal for me. To me, like, in my opinion, like being a wife or being a mother, those are roles, just like being a father and being a husband or a grandparent or et cetera. Those are roles. It was just this weird thing where I was like, why are people treating me so different?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? And so I was like, wow, not cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I was going to say that we were just talking about your last name, Ortiz Belton. And I was thinking about hyphenating my name, or actually sometimes I use it hyphened, like our CNSC, because I've been in calls where a partner's like, I thought you were Arabic or you, and, but you look like you might be, let's have, again, our last names, and then their perception of what that is and what we really are. It's all right, like an intersection of all those things. And so I, you know, I'm traditional. I wanted to take on, you know, my husband's last name. And I've noticed that some professional women in corporate America don't. They keep their last name, and in other countries, right? They keep their last name all throughout their whole career. But for me, I did it for my son, like in him, you know, because it's already happened when their school's calling his dad and they're not calling me. And it's just because on the school papers, we weren't married yet. But in reality, we're married, we live in the same house, and anything happens with Luke, I'm home. I can, you know, I work from home. I can go get him, but they always call him because they have the same last name.
That's very interesting.
Now I have the same last name, but we didn't go the traditional route. We didn't get married and then have kids. We did it all backwards.
I think for me, it was really making sure that I kept part of who I am, right? Multiple like facets to this, you know, why I decided, and you know, I talked about it with my, you know, fiance partner at the time, and I think it's a little bit different for us. So we're, you know, two women, right? And so like, oh, who carries a last name and all of that, right? You have that conversation. I happen to have four brothers, and I'm the only, you know, the only, so I think they, it's carried on for a little bit, right, with them, and she happens to have no brothers, right, so I think, you know, for me, our children will have her last name, but for me, keeping Ortiz and then hyphenating it, right, I'm keeping my Latinidad, which I'm very proud of. Where I've gotten today was with that last name, right? it's been tough, right? Because of all the things we just talked about, right? Like your last name alone can be a disadvantage, which is ridiculous. So you know, even with that, but I also wanted to honor my you know, my union and the vows that I made to her, and to also show that I am married, right? I think it was, for me, it was a nice compromise. Sometimes I feel like I'm like this feminist and I'm like, well, no, I've always said I wasn't going to change it, but I think it's different here. Right. And I'm in a same sex marriage. So.
Oh, and congratulations on your wedding. I know you were married recently.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you another question, more about, like, to get to know your background a little bit more. Like, if you could tell us your a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up.
Yeah, totally. So I am the daughter of a Puerto Rican father and a Dominican mother. I was born in Puerto Rico, I always say raised in DR, but I wasn't really raised in DR. I was raised with my Dominican side of the family. But I went to Dominican Republic literally 2 weeks after I was born. My mom got on the ferry and, you know, she went over to DR, and short after, they found themselves in Florida, in Miami, Florida, which is where my two youngest brothers were born. And so I spent, you know, my really toddler years there. And my parents moved to, and I can be very open about the story because I actually talk about it in my book a little bit. You know, my mom and my dad is Puerto Rican, so he's technically a U.S. citizen, but my mom was not, you know, and so they came to the U.S. chasing an American dream, right? Like many of our parents did. And at the time, they were doing well. My mom, she didn't get to finish college. When she moved to Florida, she was working as a notary public for a lawyer, a Latino lawyer. And so that was awesome. But then, you know, then the kids came along, you know, she would bring me to the office, a little baby. She literally would bring me to the office and I would be right next to her in a corral right there while she was doing her work. But then came my brothers, right? And so clearly things got difficult, and because she wasn't able to finish her degree. It's just after that, things just got harder and harder. And, you know, there was a death in my family. So my aunt passed away when she was really young, which caused my grandfather to pass away within months later of a heart attack. And so that kind of had a ripple effect in our family after that. And I made no decision. My parents decided to move to Lawrence, Mass at the time. And they came here with the promise of building wealth at the time through the drug business. And, you know, it was an aunt's husband at the time who was in that business, and my family came over, and that's what they got into early in the 90s, right? And, you know, it was difficult. Well, it was, for a while, it was prosperous for us. I think my family did really well in that. And we were kids and we grew up with them. We grew up with all great things, but things like that come to an end eventually, right? And that sort of, you know, you just kind of hit rock bottom after that. And I always say that, and sometimes you see it in the movies, right? Like, and it's literally, it plays out like that. You know, you're in a high and then you fall. And then that, what that does to your family and how it breaks your relationships and bonds is everlasting, right? And so my family saw the effects of that, right? And so my parents separated, you know, family split up, people moved different places. And so the family unit started to sort of dissipate. And then, you know, and then here we are growing up with a single mother in Lawrence, right? And, you know, who's working two jobs in a factory to try to to maintain her three children. And, you know, it's a difficult pill to swallow for, you know, women who come and who are, especially her, she was so ambitious and so passionate about education and all of that. And, you know, she was building what she thought was a great thing for her family. And, you know, she's, again, following her husband and following these things. And that, you know, years later, it panned out not to be great. And, you know, it was difficult for us growing up, right? But I think a lot of people go through the same, you know, my mom, we're Section 8, welfare, food stamps, all of that. But I think she, people always ask the question, like, who's your hero, right? Like, who's, if you had someone to mention, and it's the cliche, but I'm like, she is the motivation why I do a lot of the things that I do. And even today, my father is back in the picture, and he's around, and they live together and all of that. But I will always be thankful to that woman for all of the things that she went through, right? In order for mm-hmm. us to be able to be where we are today. So, you know, grew up in Lawrence, and I call it the big Washington Heights. It's all Dominicans and Puerto Ricans, and so cultural, full of flavor, full of passion, but also grit, right? And Lawrence doesn't have the best reputation. It really doesn't. Now the city has come a long way in recent years, but you know, you grow up with that, and you grow up people, you know, knowing that you're from Lawrence. And so then I grew up with this sense of like, I gotta get out of the hood. Right. Like I have to leave the hood. That's the first thing I need to do. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to get my family out of here. You know, this can't be life. And I didn't go to Lawrence High School. I ended up going to Central Catholic, which is a private Catholic high school here in Lawrence. But at the time, I remember you can kind of count with your hands how many Lawrencians were in my actual class, which goes to show you sort of how the school was set up. And even that experience was very eye-opening for me, right? Coming from the, you know, Lawrence public school system, then to a predominant, there was a lot of males in the school, because it had previously, before that, it used to be an all-male school before St. Mary's and then merged. And just that experience, right? Coming from such a cultural city where on the other end, there's not really many whites that I see, right? Unless you're going to like Mount Vernon, which is the nice area. And, you know, and growing up, and that's what you experienced, was hard. And, you know, at school, you can imagine things that we went through, right? And being the kids who were on scholarship, who were part of the Montana Network Project. And, you know, but I think that taught me, like, it made me grow, right? Because to be young and to be in high school and to have to go through those experiences, then after that, when it was time to go to college, I was like, I'm ready, right? Like, I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to get out of this place. Like, get me out of Lawrence. And, you know, I went off to Boston. I studied in I went to Emmanuel College for undergrad, then went off and got a couple of degrees, but, you know, and all of that. But I think, my experience being from Lawrence and going up here and things that I went through, right? They're a big driver for a lot of the decisions that I made after that, right? A lot of what drove, you know, me going away to the city in Boston, going, particularly choosing the school that I went to, right? And along that entire time, there was just a bunch of naysayers, like a lot. You know, I feel like my entire life, it's just no, 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 no. And then don't tell me, no, I'm a type A and I'm an Aries. No me diga que no, because then that's just.
I know, it's almost like, I resonated with a lot of your mom's story coming to, as an immigrant to this country and looking for that American dream. And I also think of my mother as like the strongest, most, you know, powerful, along with my grandmother's role model or person in my life, because when we put our lives into perspective to what they went through, like now as a mother, I'm like, oh, you know, my son talks back to me or something, but we're not crossing the border right now. You know, like the things that my mother had to experience, and you know, the three jobs that my father had to work, my mother was, you know, always fighting for you know, people to understand her because of her accent, fighting so that we pushed ourselves in school, even though my parents didn't graduate high school. Like, they never stopped working. And I think one of the most important things that our parents have given us is, this is the fight. Like, you're experiencing, and good or bad, we saw things that maybe other 3 or 4 or 5 year old girls did not see. Mm-hmm. And at that perspective, I know, because my sister has not experienced some of the things that I saw my parents go through. So I have so much appreciation for immigrant families who come into this country, and then they push, they keep working so hard, no matter how many jobs, to ensure that their kids have that education. Why? Because like us, we're not going to stop working hard or looking for the next job opportunity or the next board to serve, because we know what our parents went through. We are not going to go backwards. And I think we all have that in common here, that our parents may have gone, made good or bad decisions, but they got us to where we are right now. And now it's our job to help the next generation, help the younger students and women and Latinas in this community, so that they feel and that they also remember where they came from. I think that's one of the biggest things. If you can think about what your where your ancestors came from, how hard it was to live in a world of wars, in a world of immigration and migrating to other unknown countries and unknown languages. I think about that sometimes because I'm like, I really would like to relocate to like Europe or somewhere else. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to learn another language.
Yeah.
But for all those things, thank you for sharing and telling us about your story, because I think, you know, I definitely just learned a lot about things that we have in common, things that we've experienced, and how we can grow from that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think everyone has a journey, and I think everyone can learn from each other and what we went through. And it's funny because you sort of find those commonalities. And by only telling your story, do you resonate with people? Do you connect? Do you create those relationships? Because I always say, like, there's more than what meets the eye. Like, you look at me, you know, initially, I like to be comfortable. So I go and this is the thing that I hate. Like, I feel like I get treated a certain way because I want to wear a hoodie and sweatpants and I go to the grocery store, right? But I'm like, no, like I am professional, and I am able to, you know, carry myself. And I just feel like what we go through, even in society, like, it's just, this cross that we carry, even when it's something that doesn't even need to be carried. So if I like to be dressed in clothes, and I just don't, you know, hoodie, and I don't, but you treat me like I'm not, hey, listen, by looking at me, you won't tell that I have 4 degrees. By looking at me, you won't tell that I run a nonprofit organization. By looking at me, you won't tell that I'm a successful woman in finance or that I have a math degree. Like, you can't tell any of that just by looking at me. There's more than what meets the eye. And, you know, it's like, why do we have to, you know, do that? I can be standing in my hoodie and someone else, the equivalent white male or even a white woman, can be doing the same, and the treatment is different. And you see it, and it's still to this day. And you see what we're going through, what we're living through, particularly from a racial landscape point of view. And sometimes I feel like things are getting worse and not necessarily better. And, you know, how do we deal with that? And it's, you know, what there's already a lot of things that we have to carry, things that we have to unpack, and then all these additional things, you know, it just makes our journey that much harder. And not everyone understands it. And not everyone's journey is the same either, right? Like, not every immigrant story is the same, you know, like, an Italian immigrant story might still be different, right? And mm-hmm. we can sit here and have a, you know, discussion and of just around that, right? But you can find similarities. But I do think that, you know, the Latino culture community particularly has been hit hard as of late, right? And COVID-19 has hit us really, really bad, you know, and gateway cities like Lawrence and Chelsea and Springfield. And, you know, those are the things that we have to go through and we live on a day to day, and how that affects our families, right? And everyone's carrying on about their days, but there's just all these additional things that we have to bring with us to work, to, you know, to our volunteer positions, to even the club, if you're going clubbing, but they're there and you carry them, right? And those are things that they either keep you going, your motivators, all of that. But I feel like we're resilient people. Latinos are resilient, and we make do well with very little, right? And I think that's what makes us such a fruitful culture.
Definitely.
I want to go back to talking about our roots and highlight something that I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, and it's like, here's the moment for it. Talking about the Italian American story, right? My husband is Italian, half Irish. And when I met him, he knew how like Latina, and he's like, I'm deep into my culture. He was also the first American person that I dated. It was a very big culture shock for me. Long story short, I was like, so you speak Italian, right? And he was like, no. I'm like, you're close to your family, right? And he's like, no. And to me, it was just like, que cosa más rara. Like, what? Like, that is so weird. So it was hard for me to understand that perspective and then not judge. So then digging deeper into it, finding out that, right, there was a different, because there's so many different immigrant families here, right? It's not just the Latinos, that these families it was a life or death matter where they wouldn't teach the new generations the language and the culture, right? Because if they were identified, because back in the days, people would get killed or raped or, you know, whatever, beat up, right? For whatever that was, versus now it could still happen. But just thinking about that. So I was like, I cannot imagine all of these people. I believe that this country is, we're all immigrants. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think about the people who might not feel that they have their roots to come from another place than from here, where their history and roots and culture had been lost, right? And holding that space for them. Because I know my husband's such a family oriented person, and he loves that. He loves being part of my family. And he's like, I'm not Bolivian. He's like, but I feel like I am Bolivian because I'm with your family, you know? And, so trying to honor that for him and trying to help him embrace and continue to learn about the culture that, you know, through survival mode, it wasn't being able to pass by generations. So the reason why I'm bringing this up for anybody that's listening, I think that it's just really important to just let that sink in, right? And being able to maybe pay it forward if someone's not really connected with their roots or culture, show them inspiration, you know, or guide them through the way. Because I think with us going back to our roots and being Latinos, we're very lively people, and that kind of bothers sometimes others, but we're so rich in our culture and proud. I think that's why we kind of stand out a lot, right? And I think that's something we need to be proud of, but to pay it forward to inspire others, because it's not just about us, right? Because we have to continue having all of these cultures alive, because I think that's what brings everybody together, to having diverse opinions and perspectives. And if you have a table and you have everybody around the table, we don't want just Latinos sitting at the table. We want everybody, you know, want to make sure that these people are going back to their roots. And if they don't know, fine, you know, but honor your ancestors and go dig, go ask questions, you know? So thanks for allowing me to talk
about that. Make assumptions, right? Like, I think that's key. Like, that's so important. Like, don't make us, and we ourselves are guilty of that. Us Latinos, we do it with our own people. Like, we can be just as guilty of it, but we can't make any assumptions. Everyone comes from like a completely different background. Everyone has a different story. It's funny because I met a young woman, a peer actually, and she, I remember her being so excited to meet me. And this was through a completely different program that had nothing to do with like multicultural, you know, nothing like that. It was a business program. But you know, I speak of my story, and I of course always speak about Alpha Boston and how I'm involved as president, because I love the organization. And she's like, well, I'm so excited to see a Latina, and you know, cause I'm Latina too. And again, I made the assumption that she was white because she looked it, right? Right, and here I go, I was guilty of that. So when I heard that, I was pleasantly surprised, because you know how we are, tres Latina, bueno, you know? And she goes to tell me her story. She's like, well, I'm glad I'm talking to you, because we're here talking about all these leadership things and business, but you know how, and we're talking about authenticity. How can I be an authentic leader if I don't honor my Latinidad? Like, how do I? And so I learned that, you know, growing up, she was half Peruvian and half white. And growing up, her mother would not teach her the language. She wouldn't teach her Spanish. She would always say, you know, like, don't say that you're from Peru. She wouldn't let early on, she would go visit her cousins in Peru and all of that. But then it's like gradually that stopped. And it, and her mom, and it wasn't because her mom didn't love her culture or anything like that, but it's because she was, as a mother, afraid perhaps of her daughter maybe going through some of the things that she went through, right? And so they're here now in the US, and she was raising her to, you know, essentially close half of her. And it's sad, right? The way I look at it, because today she's a grown woman and she's struggling with this part of her identity that is so vital to who she is as a woman. And so it's even those kind of stories, right? And we sometimes do it to ourselves, and these are all things that people don't see, and you just don't see that when you look at someone. And that's why I love the storytelling. That's why I like to get to know people, and learn from everyone, because, you know, there's always a lesson. Like, there's always something to be learned, and there's always a takeaway. And trust me, I've changed my way of thinking on a lot of things because I've seen them differently as a result of, you know, conversations and just being enlightened, right? And that's, like you said, Vanessa, how, si te quedas around the same people, like, how are you ever gonna grow? Like, you have to expand your network. You have to do it.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were saying that, about how we sometimes have our own biases, and how do we confront bias, like in the workplace, or how do we call it out? How do we have like these tough conversations? And this has come up in some of the DEI work that I've been doing at Walter's Kluwer. And there's, you know, like a white bald man, for example, who was like, I'm here because I want to learn. Like, there's, you know, an older white guy or an older Asian guy. Like, it doesn't matter who they are. Like, they're all from different backgrounds. And they're like, diversity and inclusion is so important, and talking about biases. And, you know, sometimes we make our own assumptions. Like, it's so hard to have these conversations. Like, why is it so hard to have these conversations? So I was trying to, like, think about that, and like, how can we have these conversations? How can we like put our own assumptions aside and just treat people like humans and just talk to them like, you know, and not assume anything of them, but just to hope for the best of them and give them an opportunity to tell you who they are. Let them not feel, you know, that they can't be their true normal, true selves. Because I've definitely had a friend who told me that she was raising her daughters to be in the American culture, like to sort of not abandon their Latina culture, their, you know, their background, their Hispanic or Latino culture, but more so to, because that they were light skinned, they had light eyes, that they had light, like nice, beautiful hair, that they should focus on that because they weren't going to have the issues of, let's say, if you have darker skin, or if you have, you know, curly hair, or that just because they look the part, that they weren't going to have identity issues. And it broke my heart to tell her this, but it works both ways. Mm. Like, I grew up feeling like my skin color, my eye color was not good enough because I was around girls that didn't look like me. I always felt like the outcast in high school and college, because I lived in New Hampshire, and I felt it reverse. Whereas these girls are going to grow up in this, at one point realize that there is more to me. You know, I come from this beautiful country that speaks another language, and where is my identity in all this? Like you said, like what makes you different really does make you special, and it doesn't make you less than anyone, and it doesn't make you better than anyone. So it was hard to tell a friend this, but I tried to make her understand that she needs to have those conversations of identity, of where they came from, because if they were born here and they ignore that, I don't think you're helping them later on in life.
Yeah,
I totally agree. And I think it's just not, aside from like, right, helping them and finding their own identity, because that happens as, you know, they grow up in life, I think it's also, but helping it pay it forward, because there's always going to be someone having a difficult time, right, getting through a situation with having an identity back to their roots. versus if you have someone who's kind of like, you know, maneuvering the way, it's like, you know what, I got you. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's a safe space versus kind of like being divided, you know what I mean? And versus the bringing people together, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know what I would have given to have someone that looked like me to help me, besides my mother, of course, but she wasn't in a position to do this because she didn't speak the language and, you know, she didn't understand the system. Someone to help me fill out my FAFSAs. Mm-hmm. When I was a grad, you know, when I was applying for college. You know, I was told I wouldn't get into any of those schools, into any of the schools that I applied to. I got into every school and I even got a scholarship, full scholarship, full ride to one that I decided to say no to because I didn't want to go there. I had options, you know, mm-hmm. but I was told no, right? And what I would have done to have someone who looked like me to tell me, mm-hmm. you're going to, like, yes, you can. Thank God that I have that grit, right? Because you told me no, so I'm going to do it, right? Not everyone is like, right? We don't all have ISIS's personality, right? We don't, you know, and it's tough for us to, you know, kind of grab it and go and just force your way through. And that's why I do it, right? Like I have my regular job 9 to 5, right? But I also volunteer, which what feels like on a full-time basis for an organization that's creating similar opportunities for those that are coming after me, right? Like in finance, it's hard to see women that look like us. And you know, it's difficult, right? And so like, you know, I was there, you know, very far and few in between, but what do I tell my niece who likes math mm-hmm. and wants, you know, like, what do I tell her?
No, well, you're telling them because the whole purpose of what you just said was this podcast so that girls who are listening to this podcast right now are identifying with our stories because they're families have lived through similar situations, and they're going to hear this and understand that, again, you should never be limited by anything or any imagination of what someone else's potential of you is. Not by your hair, your skin, your eyes, whatever it is, not by your test scores, and not by your guidance counselor or what your teacher says. You know, you have to really feel that if you have a strong desire to do something in life, that you will see it through. And that every time that someone says no, you will say, okay, why not? And keep going and yeah. keep going, because it's people that have, I mean, I think for me, like what you were saying, the more people have told me no, the more I've wanted to go forward. But I know that there's so many girls that someone says no, then they're become more insecure with their abilities as a woman, as a professional, as a student. And then they will start believing, they start reading into that rhetoric. And you know what? That's what simple-minded people say.
But it could be a strong force. And that's the sad mm-hmm. part, that it could be a strong force, strong enough that could derail young women from reaching their fullest potential. And so that's why it's important for one, us to have these conversations, right, that we're having, for us to be a voice for younger women, and for us to also set that example and be there for them, right? To lift them up and create similar opportunities for them. We have to celebrate the things that we are conditioned to think are not good about ourselves.
100%.
Our hair, right? Our skin complexion, where we were born, where we come from. If we're from the hood, guess what? Maybe that's why I have a little bit more grit than you do, right? Like those things build yeah. strong, you know, strong bones. And those are things that need to be celebrated. Like and I get it. It can be hard, right? When you have people telling you no, and people that you may look up to, or the white man or the white woman who's on TV, but no, you deserve to be there too. I deserve to turn my TV on and see you there. Mm-hmm. I deserve to go into a room and not be the only woman, not be the only person of color, and not be the only person representing the LGBTQ plus community. It's mm-hmm. I think there's so much diversity in our people. And I think we need to celebrate that. You know, as young women, we are told no too often. It's funny. So I say those are the three things. And I changing my language literally as of yesterday, because I would call them my triple whammies, those three things I just mentioned, right? And not for me, right? Like I say that because like society sees it that way. They're like, oh, well, you're a woman, boom. You're Latina, oh, well, there you go. And then you're gay, well, oh, you know? But to me, those are great things. Now, when I talk about them, I say that because sometimes they feel like those are crosses you're carrying, but those are the best parts of me. You know, me being a woman, me being Latina, me, you know, being in love with a woman. And that's okay, right? And that's okay. That's totally okay. But for you, when you have people who are telling you that that's not, it can be sometimes easy to sort of fall in that, you know, in that. And so now I, you know, someone told me like, girl, those are not whammies. Those are not, you got the trifecta effect. And I'm like, yes, like, duh. And it's true. And,
You don't realize it though.
But you know, it's taken me realizing, and it's not just you know, you being patted on the back or someone telling you, but I've worked hard to get where I am. It was hard, but you know, I've had great mentors along the way. But if I did it, I'm here to tell anyone who's listening that you can too. And we are, people like us are here to help you in that process, right? In that journey. And I love this conversation. I love it because of that, because we're hopefully just, even if it's one person, right, that's listening, it can take that one thing away. To me, that's success.
I'd love for us to talk a little bit about dreaming bigger. I don't know if this has happened with you, Paula, or AC. Like, what is the situation, right? When your parents come here, they're immigrants, they have this life, you do a little better. Do you ever feel guilty for wanting more? That's part one of it.
Yeah.
And then the reason why I'm trying to have this conversation and topic is because for the listeners, I want you to dream big, like 20 times bigger. I don't want you to feel guilty. I want to talk about the support and community that we have found, right, through our growth in learning how to fail forward, to be curious, but most importantly, ask for help. Because, right, it's one of these things where we get no, and then we just stop, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I don't want our listeners to be like, well, must be nice because someone said yes to you. Yeah, well, guess what? It took like 25 knocks.
Yes.
But it took a community. Find your community. It took being curious. It took asking questions and asking for help, right? Yeah. So Paula, do you want to talk a little bit about if you have something first?
Yes. So when I worked in hospitality to pay for college loans, I felt like I was never going to reach my dreams. I would like look at, you know, successful CEOs, successful women in all sorts of different fields. And every time I had to clean a table, I said to myself, like, one day I will be in that office. Like, and I continue to say that to myself as I clean the tables, as I receive sexist comments, as I continue to pay for my college tuition on my own, because I took on that whole thing by myself and I had a couple of scholarships, but nobody paid for it. So I was like, I'm not going to be in debt and continue to live in debt. I'm going to work in whatever job I can get in Boston. And so part of the reason, that's like part of the reason, that was like my motivation, because I was not going to continue to be viewed as someone who is just here to serve me. How about I'm here to serve you, my knowledge, my passion, my creativity, like all of the things that I felt like I was losing a part of myself working in hospitality, that I was wasting my time, that I was staying up at night and not really shining or not using my degree, that I wasn't, that my parents weren't proud of me because this is what I was doing just to pay for school. So I went through a long time of feeling that I wasn't worth much, that I should just objectify myself to whatever people say in order to make money. And there was a big turning point in my life when I started working in finance or working in a hedge fund, where I said, I'm going to start to work in several different organizations in the city. And I want to get to know young professionals. I want to get to know people that look like me, because I was, again, a woman in finance, or starting off her career in finance. And I felt like an outcast in a lot of situations where I didn't have a finance background. So I started to think of my life and have a vision, a bigger vision of my life. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't hard. It was very hard because you do have that imposter syndrome that comes up in the back of your head and you're like, yeah, I worked this hard. I have this job now. I'm doing well, like paid off my college tuition, but I'm not good enough because I don't have a master's, or I'm not good enough because I don't look like, or I don't have enough years of experience. But that all of those things would set me back for the day. But the next day I was like, I don't care. I'm coming back stronger. I'm going to work in this field. I'm going to work in software. I'm going to work in healthcare. And now I feel like I've reached a point in my life where I was able to connect my passion, what I'm really passionate about, with my purpose. And mm-hmm. it's not objectifying myself waiting a table, which I love it. Anybody who works in hospitality, you make so much money. But at the same time, it was degrading my soul. Like I felt like I was losing myself every time that I had to sit and wait a table. But it was, again, what got me to get out of debt and meet people who believed that, you know, that I could be something in life. Mm-hmm. So I think you always have to think of, like, you know, what do you really want to accomplish? Like, who do you look at right now? And you're like, I want to be that person, like someone that inspires you. And don't stop working until you get to that, because your dreams need to be big, because there is going to be a lot of bumps in the road. So you may not get there right away. But it's those people who are resilient enough, confident in themselves that they can get ahead and not afraid to dream big is what I would say.
I say dream big and have multiple dreams, right? When I think of myself, right? Because I kind of think of dreams like as kind of like goals also at the same time. I dreamt of maybe being that. So growing up, I wanted to be a businesswoman. And I was like, I'm going to own this like salon, right? That has like, you can do hair, you can do nails, and you can literally, you know, get them sawed and all this stuff or whatever. Yeah. I'm in business, great, but that didn't pan out and don't care to do that. But, you know, even then, you don't know how that's going to sort of come to fruition. Like you're just kind of going. And I remember growing up and, well, you know, in Lawrence, you saw everyone just worried about, and it was unfortunate, but you saw a lot of people on welfare, right? So they're what others might look at, right? Because that's another sort of thing that you have to deal with. Like, well, Latinos are here, they just want to take from the system, right? Oh, they're just here, they're just, you know, yeah, of course they're going to be living off the government. But I saw a lot of that. So a lot of people getting money from the government. And because of that, they were, maybe it made it easy. So then they weren't necessarily trying to find ways to like learn ways to create generational wealth, right? I think our culture suffers from that a lot, especially if you're coming to the US and you don't even know how to navigate like the economic and financial system. It's hard. And so for me, financial, like I talk about, that's another thing I talk about, which is why I was involved with Junior Achievement, right? Because we need to start teaching them young. Like we don't know how to manage money. We don't know how to do that. And even I growing up, right? Like I was like worried about making sure that I had the latest Jordans or the latest, you know, Air Force Ones, right? Or the Rockaware jacket, like, like all these things that, you know, don't really matter because at that age, that's what you're thinking about. But I also had this dream that I wanted to be this businesswoman and that I knew that I wanted to have this gorgeous house and stuff. So I'm like, well, how do you make that happen? In the interim, you're not making decisions that are, you know, adding to that goal. So for me, it's been important. That's why also I went into finance. That is why, you know, got a math degree, because I wanted to do what I hadn't seen my family do, right? At one point, like they had all this money from all those bad things that happened, you know, and get what they said, con el dinero, like there's nothing to show for it, right? Like, because they didn't know how to take it and invest it, right? While they could. And, you know, then here we are years later. And then it's already hard as it is for us, because I say a lot of us start at negative. We don't even start at zero. I feel like we start at negative. Oftentimes we're assuming responsibilities of our parents because we care so much about them, and, you know, sometimes help them with bills and stuff like that. So it's it's already tough to start. And then when you sometimes come into money, or when you do create, you know, something for yourself where you are earning a decent, you know, amount, then you don't know what to do with that. And it's like the same cycle all over again. And so we have to break that. And I feel that what for me, you know, when I was in, you know, I had said, and I talk about this in the book too, I was like, I have three goals. I'm going to get my second master's degree. I'm going to, you know, be a homeowner and make a six-figure salary by the time I'm 30. That was my goal. I was like 25, whatever. I was like, I'm going to do it. That's what I'm going to do. And by the age of 29, I accomplished them. But it was hard along the way, right? And then then they were done. And then we were like, okay, what? Those were like, at one point, those were dreams. Those were things that I was like, oh my God, if I was only a homeowner, like, oh my God, another dream, right? And then I did it. That's why I say multiple dreams, because, okay, now I did that. Now what? Right? Yeah. Like, now what? Like, I accomplished that. But you have to continue to want more and better for yourself, and challenge yourself, right? To reach newer heights, because at one point I didn't think that I would get there, and I got there. So if I could get there, then I'm gonna work towards the next goal, and I'm gonna, you know, and you chip at it, and you keep on going, you keep on working little by little. And, you know, yes, I'm earning, we feel guilty sometimes. I earn more than my parents ever fathomed, you know, earning, right? And how do you do that? Sometimes do I feel guilty sometimes going out and buying myself the designer bag? Yeah. But I also know that I work darn hard for that. Jeez, those are a lot of hours that I put in at the office, right? But I also know that while I'm rewarding myself for my hard work, I am creating generational wealth by investing in my 401k, right? By buying property, right? And investing in more, by doing all of those things, right? So you don't feel bad for wanting to, you know, reward yourself in that sense, right? But understand that there's a bigger, you know, dream. Like, there's something else that you're trying to get at. And the materialistic things and all of this, they'll be there. They'll always be there. But it takes hard. It takes a lot of the, you know, willpower to be disciplined around money, around wealth, around creating that, right, and building that. And you know, in our culture, I think it's tough it was certainly tough for my parents, right? I'm sure they're still to this day, they're like, well, I would have thought that I would be in a different place by now, right? And so then I carry that with me too now, right? Because then I'm like, well, no, whatever they didn't get to do, I want to be able to accomplish for them, right? So my next goal is I want to buy my mom a big old house. So that's one of the next goals, right? So that's what I'm chipping at now.
No, that's great. And thank you for pointing that out, because I think it's a huge gap where it's so important to either invest in something or have a 401k, or at least think about, instead of renting, buying something. I wish I did so long ago. I didn't. So definitely think about how you could save some of that money and invest it in something, or in a business, or in your own business. There's so many Latino entrepreneurs right now, and they're killing it in terms of like being, actually, it's like one of the top growing areas of in entrepreneurship is Latinos. Yes. I read this somewhere. but I wanted to, just before we close and just before we end our chat, which I could talk to you all day
long. I know, right? I'm like, it's over already? No.
We wanted to see if you could tell us a little bit more about like your involvement in the community and the things that you do, and how your community's work has sort of helped you in your career or inspired some of your work.
Yeah. I think you start, right, giving back to the community. You start, it's an altruistic thing, right? You're doing it because you want to, you're giving back, no one's paying you to give your time. There's something that's driving you to do that. And for me is, you know, creating some of those opportunities for other people, right? Being the example for that young Latina who's coming after me, right? And all of that has taken me to many different places, right? So I'm on the board of several organizations. One is Phoenix Charter Academy, which is a sort of a portfolio of schools not alternative high schools. I like to stay away from that term because that's not what it is. That alternative high school has a sort of negative connotation to it. But these are charter schools that are really focused on providing opportunities to the students who would have otherwise been forgotten. And I sort of, I say that, you know, quote unquote, because, you know, they're not given the opportunity. And so think of the, you know, the single mothers who may have had a, you know, teenage mothers, right? Or the young boy who may have gone into a gang and ended up going to jail and now he's back out. And maybe, you know, there's just no place for them given what they've experienced to get into like the regular school system, right? So very passionate about that organization. And one of the schools is in Lawrence, right? So I'm a Lawrencian and I'm moved back to Lawrence. So to me, it's a very, very special. I said,
you got there through Latinas for Education.
I did, yeah, which is, yeah.
We have that in common.
So, so Latinas for Education, I went through a program there, which allowed me to be part of that board. I'm involved with the Lawrence Boys and Girls Club. I grew up one of the Boys and Girls Club here in Lawrence. And it's nice to start reconnecting again as an advisory council member. And you know, there's a bunch of other organizations locally, but I think one that's near and dear to my heart is Off of Boston. And I have the privilege now of leading that organization. This is my first year, a 2-year term, and they're creating impact for Latin. I mean, in Boston alone, we have over 8,000 members. It's a national association, Association of Latino Professionals for America, and nationally, we're touching over 9,000 members. And so I think that goes to show, like really the impact that organization is creating. And I'm blessed to have sort of like bumped into it, right? When I was in college and I was at Emmanuel, you know, I'm like, on the Tano Latino, like I'm like the closest thing that I can get to like a Dominican was going at, like the closest thing I could get to a Dominican was going to JP on Center Street, right? So I can get a chimichurri or like, and I'm like, well, that's not fair, right? Like, where are they? And not just that, where are the professional Latinos who are looking to attend conferences, who are, you know, where are they? And, you know, I remember meeting with a mentor of mine from the Lawrence Boys and Girls Club at Raisa, and she put me in contact with Rad, who was executive director at the time. Yeah. And funny enough, Rad is a little bit older than I am, but we both grew up in Lawrence. We went to the Boys and Girls Club. We both went to Central Catholic, and today I'm, you know, he's an amazing friend and great mentor. And you know, after he introduced me to OFFO, it was pretty much a wrap. I was doing my graduate program, my first graduate program, and after that chance meeting, he introduced me, and I just became a student member. And it was sort of like, it's been history since then. And I got a scholarship, I got my MBA as a result of Alpha. And when you find a network and what feels like a family, and they're creating that for you, geez, that felt good. I want to do that too, right? So as soon as I was done with my MBA, I knew that I wanted to give back to that organization. And I got on the board, and it's been 4 years. And it's not so much what it's done for me, because I'm thankful for the network that I've been able to create and expand as a result of just, you know, my involvement with the board, but just to know the, you know, what I've been able to do for someone else, right? Or what the organization collectively has been able to do for the Latinos in Boston, right? And to me, it's rewarding. It makes me feel lucky to run an organization. We have about 25 board members who are so passionate about the work that we do, and equally like me, volunteers. And, you know, we have our personal lives, but we always come back and we bring that gusto, right, to put together these opportunities, right? Whether it's networking, professional development, leadership opportunities, right? And it's been an amazing journey. And for me, every job that I've gotten, so my first job out of college is the only job that I applied to through a regular application process, right? And I will always say that my application got picked up because I went to Emmanuel, and the hiring manager went to Emmanuel. So I always felt like, you know, I got brownie points there. Every other job that I got after that was because I knew someone, or I knew someone who knew someone. It was all about my network, and it's been like that ever since. And OFFA has played a big role in that, because it's created that, right? It's created that for me. It's created it for others. And it's allowed all these other opportunities, right? For me to be involved in other boards, for me to help other people, for me to make relationships that are going to lead to even other opportunities for me like just recently co-authoring a book with, you know, 11 other Latinas, something that I, you know, it wasn't necessarily my dream book, right? But it's an accomplishment and something I'm extremely proud of, right? And it's a connection that I made to, you know, to someone that I look up to, Ileana Rojas. And, you know, it's those relationships, right? Those are the things that, you know, for me, I feel lucky. I feel like sometimes I've gotten so much more being a leader of this organization than sometimes I feel guilty because I'm like, oh, am I doing enough? And, but we are as an organization off of Boston is creating a lot of impact. And I love the work that we do with other organizations, right? Other organizations mm-hmm. locally that are creating, you know, equal impact to amplify Latinxes, right? The conexiones.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you for your leadership there. I also spent like 5 years working on the board of Alpha too. And it really has made a big impact in just getting to know other Latinos, feeling like we have things in common, feeling like we can support each other. My favorite thing was working with the students and doing like lectures on LinkedIn and social media, because the students really get me excited and fired up. But speaking of students, I hope anybody who's listening, any you know, young Latina, Latino who's listening will take something of what we spoke today, and hopefully it's a motivation. Hopefully it's a learning for you to keep going, to work hard, and never give up on any of those dreams and dream super big. Thank you, Ace, so much. Thank you, Vanessa, for being a lovely co-host. And I hope that this podcast really touches you and makes an impact in your life.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Vanessa. This was absolutely amazing. I appreciate you guys for creating these spaces for us to share our stories that will hopefully, you know, have an impact and, you know, resonate with somebody who's listening. So thank you. Thank you again. And I look forward to a lot more of these conversations in the future.
Okay. I want to ask you the million-dollar question. When you were 5, 6, 7 years old and someone asked you, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you say?
I wanted to be a teacher initially. I think it's because I was just bossy and I wanted always to tell people what to do. And I always thought that I was right. So I'm like, I have to teach you this wisdom. but that eventually started to turn right after that. And I started having an entrepreneurial spirit early on. And, you know, that's when that thing happened afterwards. I'm like, oh, I want to be a business owner and have this sort of salon. But initially, yeah, I wanted to be a teacher. And I think when you're younger, it tends to be like that, right? The firefighters, the teachers, because it's oftentimes what you see in the sheroes. But yeah, a teacher.
I love it. The reason why I ask our guests that is because it's just so amazing to hear their story, right? Throughout the episode and just seeing how life morphs out. We don't necessarily have to fit into this cookie cutter traditional, you know, set. Today, more than ever, we have the privilege to be picking and being right, you know, dream bigger and do so much more. And we don't have to just pick this one traditional career path for ourselves and hope to inspire others at any age that, you know, if they're not feeling like they're still vibing with what they're doing, it's totally fine. Like, go find something that brings you passion. It's never too late.
Totally fine. When I was in college, I started off I was doing my business major. I knew I was going to do that for sure. And I started off with an art minor. So I like to draw and paint. Well, I haven't done a lot of it in a while, but I was very much into it. I even got the art award in high school. It took me taking my freshman year, my first class, basic drawing. I got a C+. I was like, what the heck? It's drawing. How can I get a C+? And it just kind of like it just demoralized me. But in that same light, I had a professor who I had to take math courses as part of my business degree. And she was like, you know, you can do this. Like you should consider doing a math minor. And I think you would be great at it. Meanwhile, all these other people are like, no, you will never be able to be a mathematician or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'll show you. So I ended up dropping my art minor, something that I was really passionate about, and to take on this, you know, math minor, and then that would become a math major, right? So I double majored. That's why I say I got 4 degrees, because I got essentially, you know, my business degree, my math degree, and then I have my 2 master's degrees. And I wasn't, at the time, I thought I was so sure. I was 100% sure that that's what I was going to do. And it didn't pan out that way. But it's okay. It's okay not to know. your journey is going to go where it's going to go. So long as you stay true to yourself and, you know, ultimately you're driven by the right morals and, you know, the right convictions, I think you'll be successful.
Yes. Before we wrap up, I have one more question for you. What does it mean to be a creative human to you?
Wow, loaded question. Creative human. Let's see. Creative human to me is some, and we talked a little bit about this, right? And more right now, just sort of going beyond what you think the realms could be. Dreaming big, being creative, and taking the resources that you have to make them work for you. You know, creating those spaces for yourself, for others, to dream and to know that there's a journey that's going to go so much more further that you see right now, and that we are dynamic human beings, and that we bring so much to the table, and that alone makes us diverse and unique and creative humans as in general. So I think, you know, we need to start to celebrate who we are as people and all of the little things that we ultimately make us who we are as humans.
Thank you for sharing that. It's so nice to hear that just so resonates with you. So grateful for you to be here, Paula. Thank you so much. We will be providing all of your information and how people can support you, link, bio, and all that good stuff, right here on the links for the podcast. Thank you all for being here. Super grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you again for sharing. We will see you all at our next episode next week.